welcome to the Old Time Radio Daily Westerns. I'm your host, Andrew Rines, and today is June 16th, 2010. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon.com. If you plan on doing any online shopping first, go to otrwesterns.com/Amazon to start your shopping experience today. Today's episode of Challenge of the Yukon, or should I say episodes as I usually do, the first one's title is Designed for Murder, also known as Killing Sullivan. The original air date on that is June 22nd, 1944. The second one is The Duke Bows to a King. The original air date on that one is June 29th, 1944. Hope you guys enjoy.
The Challenge of the Yukon.
A king! Man, you husky!
The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the Challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police, who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. Two men walked into the long, narrow frame building that served as a bank in Morriston. They walked one after the other, and before he closed the door behind him, the second man looked back to the warmly dressed lookout standing by the sleds. They exchanged nods, and apparently satisfied, the man closed the door.
Looks like you're about ready to close up.
Oh, yes, that's right, we are. We just made it in time. Say, I don't think I've ever seen you before. Going to open an account here?
No.
Oh, then you have one. Funny, I never forget a face. I never would have thought that... What's the name?
We're wasting time, boss. Let's get the dust and get out of here.
What did you say the name was?
I didn't. Drop that book, mister, and reach. Now you can walk over and open that safe.
Oh, but
you heard me, get moving.
Yes, sir.
Duke, you go over and get what dust in the cash drawer.
Sure, boss.
Quit stalling, spin that combination.
I'm a little bit nervous. Maybe I'd better...
Stay where you are. Lift that paper, money, and the gold out of there.
I got what dust was out in the drawer, Chan.
Good. Now load all this in the sack.
There. That's all that was in the safe.
Let me see. Yeah, you're right. Well, you've been mighty obliging for a money count.
Now, wait. Yeah, you're not going to... No,
that
please.
That number you got in the faces ain't going to do us any good. You ready, Duke?
I got it all, Champ. Except those pokes.
All right, then take these pokes and go on out to the sled.
Yes.
I'll be right with you.
Listen, I'll forget I even seen you. A lot of people come in and out of here.
I never take any chance.
No, wait a minute, please.
A week passed, and then, in the early morning, at an isolated spot surrounded by birch trees, a driver halted his team of dogs. The sun glinted blindingly on the snow, and a fierce wind stabbed the man with icy intensity as he stood before the cabin.
Oh, it's you, Tick. Come on in.
Where's the boss?
Right here. Meet my friend. That brings you in so early, Tick.
Charlie Sullivan saw us leave the bank in Morriston. He's on his way to half mile now to meet Sergeant Preston.
Red was on the lookout.
Well, he slipped up. I was in the saloon over there when I heard about Sullivan. And if he gets to Preston Chan, your neck's as good as in a rope this minute. And the rest of us ain't much better off.
Yeah. That Mountie.
That Mountie's been out to get you a long time. You've just been lucky so far that he ain't been able to get enough evidence to do the job up the way he'd like to. But it looks to me like you'll get all you'll need. Unless you stop Sullivan, and stop him fast.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Duke, get the sleds ready to travel.
Okay, Tim.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to stop Sullivan. What's more, I'm going to stop that Mountie, too. I'm tired of running from that redcoat. Every time we get a good thing, he starts nosing around.
Wait a minute. It's suicide to murder a Mountie. Why, the whole force would be out on our
skins. Yeah, don't worry. We've already got an idea. Our first job's to head off Sullivan. Then we'll take care of Preston.
Taking the back trails, Chandler and his men made good time. The wary gunmen had been silent during most of their trip, and when Chick returned from scouting late the next night to report he'd seen Sullivan making camp, Chandler questioned him for several minutes. Then, early in the morning, they were on the trail before daybreak.
Listen, Chan, I'd feel a lot better if you'd let me know what you plan to do.
You'll see in a few minutes. Ho, you huskies, ho there!
How do you expect to get down on the trail from here? Guess you expect the dogs to make a jump from this ledge.
See that herd of caribou over there?
Yeah, sure, but what's that got
to
do with...
Pass down there is mighty narrow, isn't it?
Yeah, it's narrow, so what?
So Sullivan will be coming through here in about 10 minutes. There's not a track down there yet, so you... Wrong.
Hey, there he is now.
Yeah. Wait, he's well into the pass, so we won't be able to turn around in a hurry. Chick, double back quick. Drive over there behind the herd. When you hear my rifle, start firing. You get me?
Sure.
Must, you huskies! Must!
Once those bulls start running, there ain't a thing on feet that'll stop them. So, you have a meeting with Preston, huh, Sullivan? The only place you two will ever meet will be on the other side of the grave. Now it's getting closer. Are the chicks ready yet? Now.
A week later, and on the trail north of Half Mile where Charlie Sullivan had met his death, Sergeant Preston stood, looking up to the ledge walling the narrow pass.
Glenn McCall said this was about where it happened, fella. If Sullivan hadn't sent me a letter, I never would have known he was on his way to Half Mile. Well, evidently someone else knew, too.
The great dog King walked beside the Mountie, sniffing the air curiously. For mixed with the animal scent that came to his nostrils was another scent, the scent of a man. He looked at Preston questioningly, and then ran over the icy crust of the snow to discover the source. A few minutes later, he came on the man, leaning against a rock, his rifle trained on the Mountie, who walked back along the trail.
Preston's dog, huh?
Almost at the speed of light, King lunged at him, tearing the man's arm from the rifle. And as the dog stood, his fur bristling dangerously, he kept the man from retrieving the weapon that had fallen to the snow.
Caribou herd still in the hills, that's it. I'll get the money the same way I got Sullivan. All right, you mutt. Too bad my revolver's in camp.
King caught the threatening tone in the man's voice. And as the man retreated, leaving the rifle behind, the dog waited until he was out of sight, and then went back to his master. Carefully, the Mountie searched the hills and the trails for the signs of a camp, unaware that the tracks Chandler left in the snow were designed to lead him into a death trap. The next morning, with King leading the dogs, Preston followed the sled tracks of the man who seemed to be playing hide-and-seek with him. The sharpness of the outlines told him he was close to the man he sought.
Well, he's going through the pass, fella. We'll turn here and take the trail through the trees. We'll make better time. With luck, we may be able to head him off.
On, King! On, you huskies!
A short time later, the Mountie sighted the slope, which eased down toward the pass. A herd of peaceful caribou milled around like cattle. Watching them, Preston saw two men standing well behind the herd with rifles resting on their arms. He went toward them, his own rifle in readiness. But King had caught a scent, the scent of a man he recognized,
and the dog turned sharply back toward the ledge overlooking the trail.
Oh, you husband. Oh, what? Hey, Duke, it's a Mountie.
Drop those rifles and put up your hands.
Yeah, not before I get a shot at you. Oh, my shoulder! They got my shoulder!
At the sound of the rifle shots, the frightened caribou raised their antlered heads and began to run. The two men standing before the Mountie's rifle looked wide-eyed after the herd. And while Chick Kramer put his hand to his wounded shoulder, an expression of horror crossed his face.
Duke, look! Down there in the pass, it's the boss. The caribou will run him down. He won't have a chance.
Sergeant Preston shifted his position. With his gun still trained on his prisoners, he glanced toward the pass. Standing firmly on the ledge where it graduated into a slope was the great dog King, his eyes fixed on the man looking frantically at the frightened animals running toward him, their treacherous antlers lowered, their flying hooves drumming a terrifying message to the man trapped in front of him. Jack Chandler ran from his team toward the ledge, struggling for a foothold, reaching for brush, a twig, an extended rock. Anything that would save him from the sure death running steadily toward him.
I gotta grab that rock. If it'll hold. Oh, if I can only grab that rock, I'll be above the rampers.
His fingers closed on the edge of the rock. Jack Chandler raised his eyes to face the bared teeth and menacing growl of the dog who had disarmed him the day before. Like a man hypnotized, he looked into the dog's eyes. Then, in a breathless instant, Jack Chandler disappeared, to be swallowed up in the herd of frightened animals his men had stampeded.
Chandler? When Charlie Sullivan got it that way, I never thought the boss would.
Jack Chandler was responsible for the death of several men. He's beyond the law now, but you're not. You're under arrest, both of you.
The great dog rejoined the group of men, satisfied that the man who had fallen from the ledge would never again make an attempt on the life of his master. But as Duke and Chick moved sullenly toward the Mountie's sled with Preston's gun held on them, neither King nor the policeman knew that both men had but one thought. To escape.
It's a good 2 days' trip to town, so we'll hit the trail now. Travel as far as we can and then make camp. All right, get the dogs up, King.
That night, as the light of the campfire flickered low, the two outlaws talked quietly.
You know what's waiting for us when we get to town, Duke?
Yeah, sure. But I ain't aiming to stop one of the Mountie's bullets.
This way we stand a chance. We got the dust stashed away, and now it'll only be a two-way split. I tell you, we got everything to gain and nothing to lose.
King raised his head from between his paws as the two outlaws crept from their bedding.
What is it, fella? Quiet.
Get to your sled, Duke. Come on, get out. Let's get out of here.
Apparently, Sergeant Preston dozed, his head low on his chest, oblivious to the persistent tugs from King's teeth pulling at his sleeve. As the sled started and was well away from the camp...
Oh, don't look so disgusted, fella. They've made a getaway. But if my guess is right, they'll head for the spot where they've got their loot hidden. All right, get the dogs up, boy. We're going after them.
With King leading the dogs, the Mountie followed the tracks clearly edged in the snow. It was after daybreak when they arrived at the cabin. Preston pulled his sled into the protection of a rock formation. Meanwhile, inside the cabin...
Hey, Chick, what are you standing at the window for? Come on, give me a hand with this dust.
Yeah, I should have thought of it. The Mountie, he followed us, Duke. Get your rifle. We'll give him a fight. Just wait till he lifts his head over that rock. Yeah, I think we're going to bag us a Mountie, Duke.
There, give it to him. He's ready to shoot it out, Chick.
Yes, so are we.
The long, endless minutes the battle waged. Two men against one, the bullet striking against the rock sheltering Preston. Then, at a word from his master, King went silently through the timber, doubling back toward the cabin. The great dog knew what he had to do. Instinctively, he steeled his body for the impact that was to come. A large window was at the side of the cabin. Duke and Chick were firing from the front of it through the cracks in the logs. King measured the distance, then broke into a run, gathering speed with each long stride, and then the jump. Seconds later, the window smashed at the impact of the dog's body.
Hey, dog, get him, Duke!
Stop! How can I get him? He don't stay in one place long enough to get a beat.
Right, drop your gun. You heard me drop them.
Okay.
Well, I see I'm just in time to take the gold you've collected back to town with me. You're under arrest, both of you. And this time there'll be no escaping. Yes, fella, thanks to your help, the case is closed.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit, and all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They're sent to you each week at the same time. Jack McCarthy speaking. This
the Chalet,
is
Michigan Radio
of the Yukon.
On King! On your husky!
The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. Benjamin Holmes had been a brilliant man, too brilliant. For who is to know or ever understand the strangest and most mysterious of all things, man's mind? In 1890, Professor Holmes had suffered a nervous breakdown, and everyone in Catalpa felt a great compassion for the small, kindly man who absently went his own way. Everyone smiled at his harmless peculiarities. That is, everyone except Joe Flaherty, who was deeply, and it seemed hopelessly, in love with Barbara Holmes. It was early evening in the spring, and on the broad, white-painted porch of the Holmes house in the quiet college town, Joe sat on the swing, talking to Barbara.
Surely you can understand how I feel, Joe.
No. No, I don't understand. You say you love me, Barbara.
And I do.
Oh, if that were true, you would have married me long before this. Why must we waste our lives? Why must you be...
Because Dad needs me.
Well, that's the answer to it, I guess. If you loved me, you'd marry me.
Joe, it'll only be a matter of a few years. The doctors say Dad will be well again. Then we'll get married.
In the meantime, he's plotting out all these crazy schemes. You know what he's talking about now? Going to Peru. Last week it was that invention of his.
But those things are harmless. They don't hurt anyone. They're just ideas.
They're hurting us.
For the last time, I'll explain it to you, Joe. When I was a child, he took care of me. I needed him. Now he's weak and I'm strong. A sort of reversal of roles. And I must take care of him.
Weakness. Weakness is a disease. It's harmful. Because there'll always be strong people on whom the weak will lean, just as your father's doing now. Send him to an institution.
Joe! Would... Oh, Joe, he's not unbalanced. He's sick. And it will take time and patience to cure him. And see it in his eyes. They're clouded and uncertain where they were once so sure.
There's nothing uncertain about the way he's tying up your life right now. The next thing you know, he's going to be taking off on some of those schemes, and you'll be going right with him. Peru.
Yes. Yes, I'll be going with him. I don't suppose you'll ever understand. No matter where he goes or what he does, I'll stay with him till he's well again.
What was that you were saying, Barbara, child?
Oh, Dad, I thought you were in your study.
Oh, so I was, my dear, so I was. I overheard part of what you were saying about going with me. Oh, good evening, Joe. How are you? Yes, what was I saying? Oh, yes. You know, Barbara, I uncovered that old diary of your Uncle Mort's.
Oh, you mean the one he kept while he was away all that
the
time?
The one that... Yes, that's it. Very interesting. He tells about his experiences in a part of British America where no white man had ever been.
Oh, I remember.
Huh?
Yes, he used to tell me a lot of stories about that when I was a child.
I believe they were true stories. He did a great deal of talking about a wealth of gold in that country, and in the diaries he left me, there's a definite map, a map showing the way to what he terms the richest vein of gold in the world. Do you imagine?
Yeah, imagine.
Joe, Too bad he never lived long enough to go back there, Dad.
My dear, I'll tell you what we're going to do. You and I will go up there. Yes, that's what we'll do. We'll go to this place and find that gold your Uncle Mortimer discovered.
But, Professor Holmes, you don't begin to know anything about mining or prospecting.
Huh?
Why, there's been no discovery of gold in any part of British America. You'd be better off going to Peru. At least you'd stand a chance of uncovering some Peruvian ruins. But gold in that snow-covered North Country.
Because nobody knows about it. There's no sign it isn't up there, my boy. It's there. And Barbara and I'll find it.
You can't start out for some place you don't know anything about.
Not only can, but we will. Barbara, we'll begin packing tomorrow. Yes?
Joe, it's come. A letter from Barbara.
From
Barbara? Here. Aren't you going to open it?
Yes, of course.
Are they coming back? Are they... Oh, now, isn't that ridiculous? I was so excited, I never even noticed the postmark.
It's postmarked Dawson, Yukon Territory.
A short time later, Joe left the United States. The boat he took passed in mid-ocean, the small steamer that was to nose its way from Alaska through Puget Sound to dock in Seattle, bearing a cargo that would electrify the world, a ton of gold. When the last and greatest gold rush began, Joe Flaherty was already in the Yukon Territory, looking for something that was far more valuable to him than the glittering ore that meant wealth and power. Several months after his arrival in the Yukon, Joe Flaherty lost his lead dog. In a country where dogs were the only sure means of transportation, he had to buy another one. That was how he came one day to bargain with an old-timer who sold huskies and malamutes.
That's a good-looking dog there.
Huh? That husky.
Yeah.
Listen, mister. That dog has the meanest disposition you ever seen. He'll kill anything on four legs. Or two. I throw his feet into that there cage. But he's a working fool. Well, that's the lot of them. Got some mighty fine dogs here.
How much for that husky?
Joe Flaherty bought the husky. The dog's name was Duke, a mean and surly animal, his face and body marked by the teeth of the dogs and animals he'd met in combat. At heart, he was wild, but both the dog and the man recognized the silent bond that existed between them. Duke had been owned by many men, but he had accepted none of them as a master until Joe bought him. They covered countless hundreds of miles along the frozen trails of the Yukon. And then one night, they made camp with another man, Reverend Walden.
That dog of yours is going to be lucky if he gets away from those wolves alive.
He'll fight anything his own size or bigger.
Yes, but a pack of hungry wolves. You could break up that fight by firing a shot into the pack.
He'll come out all right. If he doesn't, it'll be because he's weak. Weaker than those wolves. Animals have the right idea. Kill or be killed. Survival of the fittest.
The next night, when he stood talking to Sergeant Preston and a friend of his, Reverend Walden spoke thoughtfully, his eyes staring unseeingly at the comfort of the small, warm cabin.
And he stood there watching the fight, Sergeant. That dog was worth several hundred dollars, but he wouldn't interfere because of that philosophy of his.
That is odd. I've never known a man to risk a lead dog in a fight with wolves.
Very foolhardy, I'd say.
Yet, as I watched his face, I could see the struggle going on inside of him. He loved the dog. I've only seen a few men like him before. Well, another year or so, and he will have completely lost all compassion for human weakness and suffering. That sort of man frequently makes a very dangerous killer, doesn't he, Sergeant?
Yes, that's sometimes the case, Reverend Walden. You say the dog came out all right in the fight.
He killed one of the wolves. And I'm sure one or two more of them carried the marks of his teeth. There's no mistake about it. He's a fighter. Wild and cunning. And merciless. The dog's name was Duke.
And the man?
A young fellow, Joe Flaherty.
Flaherty? That's odd. You flirted. Could you describe him, Reverend Warren?
Benjamin Holmes listened silently to the minister's description. Then the Mountie and the minister listened while he talked.
So perhaps it would be a good idea if we were to meet this young man. He may be the same Joe Flaherty my daughter and I knew in Catawba.
Well, he certainly needs understanding and help, Professor Holmes. He's been badly hurt spiritually. And I'm afraid he'd look on me as an intruder.
We'll start out in the morning, Professor Holmes, you and I. I'm going up to Black Creek anyway, and from what Reverend Walden said, we should meet him along the trail.
Splendid. We won't say anything to Barbara about it. I'm sure it would make her very happy to see an old friend. This is a rather lonely place for the girl. I'll see you in the morning then, Sergeant.
It was late the next evening when Sergeant Preston, with the great dog King leading his pack of dogs, halted the team at a camp beside the trail. Then they looked about for some signs of the man whose sled and packs were beside the campfire. The great dog King walked through the snow not far from Preston and the man and girl who were with him. It was while they walked toward the tall and imposing timber that King became conscious of the other dog's presence. King sensed the husky's antagonism. And as he looked at the dog approaching him, he knew he was looking for a fight. He realized this stranger was not only anxious to assert his supremacy, but determined to. Quietly, the great dog stood in the snow, while the other, broad-breasted and white fanged, came toward him. It was then Preston turned, and beyond range of the Mountie's vision, Joe Flaherty stood between the two dogs. Dodging and returning thrust, King measured his antagonist and realized his skill and swiftness. His eyes glowed with a sudden terrible concentration and wariness. A long, bushy tail curling high above his body, this King bared his fangs in a fight that was as primitive and ageless as the struggle for life itself. His teeth found their mark again and again. The husky who had challenged him knew in one glaring, painful instant that here he had met his match. And he sensed, too, in every muscle of his body, steel the strength and the fierceness of past victories, that this was a battle to the death for him. He would have extended no mercy to his foe, and he expected none. He fought on, for though he had lost, he would not retreat.
Whose dog is that?
It's mine. King!
I've never seen that before. I don't understand it. Whenever Duke's fought with another dog, he's killed him. That's why he's lying in the snow now. He's waiting for the death blow.
There won't be any death blow. Your dog put up a good fight. I didn't see it start, but he made a mistake when he decided to take King over.
King, huh? Well, King isn't a coward, I'll say that. Duke started the fight, but King licked him quickly and fairly. Funny.
What's funny?
I feel almost humble. As if that dog of yours had suddenly made a magnificent gesture. He was challenged, and yet he spared Duke. Duke. Here, boy.
Sergeant Preston, Sergeant. Oh, Dad's so excited. He's discovered three pine trees that he thinks is a landmark to that pine Uncle Mortimer discovered.
Barbara! Barbara!
Joe. Joe, is it really you? I can't believe it.
All this time, I've been looking for you. Oh, darling.
This is it, Barbara. I have the map right here. There's no doubt about it. We've located the gold.
Well, hello.
Well, hello, Professor Holmes. I guess I might tell you now. I'm going to marry your daughter. I'm not even asking your permission, sir. With or without it, I'm marrying her.
Barbara.
He's right, Dad.
Well, this is an unusual day. Well, Sergeant Preston, is that your dog, Joe?
Yes. Afraid he'll have to do some recuperating before he's able to hit the trail again. Huh, fella? Say, I didn't even notice I was talking to a Mountie. I'm Joe Flaherty.
Glad to know you. King, old boy, let's see how you came out of that fight.
No question about how he came out of it, Sergeant. Almost as good as new. But Duke here... kind of seems like the Duke bowed to the King. But don't let that bother you, fella. Because I've bowed to my queen.
Darling.
Yes, fella. I think everything here's worked out all right.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit, and all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They're sent to you each week at this same time. Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
Check out the show notes at otrwesterns.com. Send me an email, podcast@otrwesterns.com. Call, leave me a voicemail. I have not had one in a while. I do love getting those. 707-98-OTRDW. Again, that's 707-986-8739. Tomorrow's going to be an episode of Have Gun, Will Travel. Till then, have a great day, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.